All right. What are we going to do about the events in Ferguson, Missouri? What is a redemptive approach for us, the people of God?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The Word of God instructs us to pursue peace with all. Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers. Romans 12, if possible, on your part, live at peace with everyone. Friends, do not avenge yourselves. Instead, leave room for his wrath. Many instructions throughout the Word in terms of interpersonal relations and working through difficult issues. We are facing one of those right now in Ferguson, Missouri, and because we are, by God's grace, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society and chaos in a church all too often in compromise, we are going to talk through the difficult, challenging issues together. Now, the phones are open, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I, of course, was following the news last night. Listen to the news conference that ran through the grand jury's decision and why it was made, the Q&A that followed. And then it was late, and I thought, I need to say something. I feel I'm supposed to say something. What do I say? Just because something's happening doesn't mean that I have to say something, doesn't mean that God's given me wisdom or insight. But I felt there was something to say, and I wrote an article. If you go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest article, you can read it. And it's entitled simply, Ferguson Must Be Redeemed. Ferguson must be redeemed. In other words, as God's people, we must find a redemptive approach to what is happening there. Now, there is no excuse for looting, for burning. There's no excuse for a family member to say, let's burn this blank. There's no excuse for that. There's no excuse for anything that incites violence. Looting someone's store is wrong under all circumstances. Setting a car on fire, police car on fire, or someone's place of business on fire is wrong in all circumstances. Inexcusable, no matter what. And when you see that kind of fruit, you know it proceeds from the flesh, not the spirit. At the same time, calls to share feelings honestly, calls to address the issues, calls to talk plainly about why there is such a massive racial divide. Dennis Prager has an important article. We have a moral divide, not a racial one, where he takes a different perspective. A lot to talk about, but we are determined to be redemptive. We are determined to talk through the controversial issues in the most practical way possible. Now, I wrote an article a few months back as things were just erupting initially, and it was called Five Obvious Lessons from Ferguson. The article that I wrote last night gives five more lessons, including the call to be redemptive. The five obvious lessons from Ferguson in the article I wrote a couple months back, number one, the racial divide in America remains wide and deep. Number two, much of white America still doesn't get it. Number three, much of black America still doesn't get it. Number four, you can't call for due process and then want someone lynched. Number five, black Americans deserve better leadership. I want to talk about the article that I wrote last night, the 5 points that I made, want to interact with some audio clips. And I want to get your feedback. I want to get your feedback. Specifically, here's my first question. After hearing the decision not to indict by the grand jury, is your basic feeling justice was done? This proves we can trust the courts. Or was your attitude, your response, this proves that we can't trust the court system? 866-34-TRUTH. What do you have to say?
We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hands up! Don't shoot! Hands up! Don't shoot! No justice, no peace! No justice, no peace!
All right, now I have a question. I have a question. These are honest questions that are being put out for discussion, and I will give some thoughts, some guidelines, some redemptive principles. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. My first question goes back to the one I asked at the end of the last segment. You can call it, on this first. First question is simply this. After you heard the announcement that the grand jury would not indict Officer Wilson on any charges, that would mean that he acted responsibly and within the law. The question is, when you heard that, did you say, justice was done, this proves the court system works? Or did you say, there you go again, can't trust the court system? What was your immediate reaction? Now, here's another question I have. There were accounts by some African-American witnesses that said that Michael Brown said, hands up, don't shoot. My namesake, the now deceased 18-year-old Michael Brown, hands up, don't shoot. There were other African-American witnesses who spoke of him charging Officer Wilson, even in a football posture, you know, running to ram into him, that described a conflict at the car. That's where the first bullet was shot. And that confirmed what forensic evidence said. So in other words, you have different opinions, but the grand jury, listening to dozens and dozens and dozens of hours of testimony, and with months of and months listening and evaluating, said that the use of force by Officer Wilson was justified. So when you hear the hands up, don't shoot chant, what would it take to convince people who believe that narrative that it's not accurate? That's just a question I have. What would it take, short of video evidence, which from what we understand doesn't exist? Yeah, I wish everybody wishes there was video evidence, you know, and then there it is, indisputable, right? But short of that, what would it take to get someone to believe that that narrative is not what really happened? In other words, if the grand jury sifted through this, unless you believe that the whole thing is completely corrupt, and that's your conviction, all right, which... that's the case, so be it. I'd like to know why. What would it take to convince someone that the evidence said that he was not shot in cold blood, hands up, don't shoot? Now, why do I personally have a problem believing that, just knowing the same evidence that you know, hearing the same testimony that you do, and now things release more fully after the grand jury said not to indict? My biggest reason for having a problem with the idea of someone with their hands up, standing there at a distance saying, hands up, don't shoot, that someone would shoot him down in cold blood, is I just don't believe that's the norm of what happens. Do I believe there's sometimes police brutality? Absolutely. Do I believe there's sometimes corrupt cops and they're on, you know, they're getting paid and they're part of a drug ring? Absolutely. Do I believe there have been innocent victims who have been shot because police were trigger happy? Absolutely. Believe that happens. Do I believe that there's more racial profiling with African-Americans than with white Americans? Absolutely. So I don't have issue with any of those things. However, especially with no prior record with Officer Wilson, I just don't believe that that's the normal thing that would happen. And therefore, that something else was going on. And when the grand jury evaluated that, they came to that conclusion. What's it going to take to convince someone the rightness of that position? I had a caller in the second hour yesterday, seemed very sweet, older black woman and Christian, and she said she honestly believes that there are cops who are just looking for the opportunity to kill innocent people. And that's why they're stocking up arms and everything for Ferguson. And she genuinely believed that. So the 5 points I made, then I'm going to go to your calls in a moment, and I'm going to elaborate on these, but you can read them in my article, Ferguson Must Be Redeemed. Number one, no verdict could satisfy both sides. Number two, there's enough evidence to support skepticism on both sides. Number three, this is not about Ferguson, meaning this is a much larger issue. Number four, the Ferguson tragedy must be redeemed. Number five, the church must lead the way. 866-34-TRUTH. And we'll start in Baltimore, Maryland with Stephen. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
So I first wanted to just say that I did hear what you were saying, and no, I don't have any probable evidence for my response. But in my personal opinion, as a young African American male, I do believe that it was injustice again. Not mm-hmm. only that, but it's very hard to try to convince other young people, such as myself and other African American young adults, to go ahead and go out there and vote. As we know, a lot of African American young males and females do not go out and vote. And so it's very hard to convince them to do that when the system is so jacked up, you know, like it's just so corrupt. How can you just really convince people to go out there and try to make a difference when it's kind of the system been proven over and over again that almost regardless of what happens or what someone can do, it can still go the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Stephen, I've got two follow-up questions for you. And again, I was asking for your reaction, and I learn constantly interacting with my listeners. So two questions, and if you could give a short response rather than long, just because I want to get to as many callers as possible. First, what have you experienced in your own life that makes you skeptical of the justice system in America?
So one time I took a trip to Kittery, Maine, and I was called a nigger by another white older gentleman. And there was a police officer really close. He was a white guy. And they pretty much didn't do anything, didn't say anything. They just said, well, that's just his personality. So my opinion, and that's just one story, you know, of being racially discriminated against.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
As a young African-American male.
Right, and I hate that happens, and I don't deny it. By the way, I don't think police could actually do anything. You know, you could call me an ugly Jew, and I don't know that they could do anything, but that's terrible, that's unfortunate, and I hate that happens. And I'm sure you got a bunch more stories and friends worse.
I understand that, and not to cut you off, but this is why, you know, the injustice, you know, a lot of African Americans are protesting, because when it comes to African American people, we're being told, oh, well, that's just what happened, and this is the problem. That's my opinion.
Yeah, got it. Hey, I'm asking for opinion, Stephen. Okay, my other question was, and that's my third point in my article. This is not about Ferguson. In other words, the protests are because of a much bigger issue. Ferguson brought it to a head. But real quick, are you sure the grand jury did the wrong thing? In other words, when you say the system is just corrupt, and I'm not challenging you, I'm just,
I believe with, in that community, 64.5% black, I just don't believe that, it should have been more, it should have been less African Americans who were sitting on the jury anyway.
Right. So, like, seven to be percentage right, seven or eight African Americans and four or five non African Americans, as opposed to only three African Americans. Yeah, that's in my article too. Hey, Stephen, thank you, sir, for weighing in. And as we keep talking to each other and interacting, we're all going to learn, and we're going to move forward, because we got to move forward, and we're going to move forward as we listen to each other. All right. And learn from each other and speak truthfully to each other. Right? Thank you, sir. 866-34-TRUTH. Michelle in All right, let's go to Angela in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
My pleasure. How are you, Dr. Brown?
I'm blessed, but obviously grieved by so much pain in the country today. What's
yes,
your perspective?
I share that with you. I just wanted to simply say that my condolences certainly does go out to the family that lost, a young African-American man. But however, when I was talking to my mother this morning, one of the points that I wanted to make was this right here. We must not forget that this young man went out to do something illegal and wrong. And we must, make the emphasis on that. I don't know how he got misguided. I don't know what his circumstances were and what drove him to go out and do what he was going to do. However, he was breaking the law. So we all know, too, that scripturally, if we wanted to speak scripturally speaking, you know, if you live by the sword, you'll die by the sword. And at the same token, I've worked security before, and there are certain things that they train you in security, you know, in protecting yourself, you know, and how you have to guard yourself. We do know that there are a lot of people that are trigger happy out here. Some people, they get a weapon and they have certain security jobs and it's a form of power. But in this particular case, I don't believe that that was the case for Officer Ferguson. I don't believe he went out and said, you know what, I want to kill this African-American man. Yep. If it was so that he really was charged at, that was a big, huge, black young man. He was a big guy. And so, by all means necessary, you know, sometimes the officers or security people...
tell you what, I got to jump in, but thank you for weighing in. Much appreciated. Give us strength to
always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Before we get into this very difficult subject in the aftermath of the grand jury's decision in Ferguson, Missouri, not to charge Officer Darren Wilson with anything, and with the riots that have now ensued and protests, not just in Ferguson, but in different parts of the country, I just want to bring a smile to your face first. And then I am determined, as the host of this radio broadcast, to be redemptive. I'm determined to say we all have perspectives that we bring to the discussion. We all have life experience. We all have spiritual experience. And if we can determine that we will not just let this crisis pass by, but that we will build on it, that we will determine to have conversations that are uncomfortable, that we'll determine to say, okay, I see it like this. It seems as clear as day to me. You seem to have a very different perspective. Tell me why. Then we are going to grow. You could just say, well, all these people that are protesting, they're just ignorant. They're just ignorant, and they just believe what they're hearing, and it's just mass hysteria. Or you could turn around and say, all these people standing with Officer Wilson, they are just bigoted and biased, and that's the bottom line. And if you talk like that and you think like that, number one, it's not Christ-like, because there's no humility with that, and there is no ability to hear another perspective. And you are judging everybody in such terms that there's no dialogue and there's no discussion. Because while you may have ignorant people protesting and you may have racist people supporting Officer Wilson, I do not believe that that is the majority on either side. The people that are doing wrong, they're doing wrong, period. People that are doing wrong, speaking wrong, they're doing wrong, period. We understand that. And the family of Michael Brown has asked for a calm. If you're going to protest, do it in the constructive way. Although there were volatile calls last night for arson, that was very unfortunate. But before I go back to your calls, let me bring a smile to your face. We have families that listen on a regular basis, homeschooling families, parents picking up kids from school. So they're kids who've listened to me for years. They're kids who've grown up listening to me. So I did a shout out to one of my faithful listeners, 5-year-old Braden, with his sweet sister, because he was running around the house the other day singing out the numbered call. So I asked to have it recorded, and I think we want to debut a new announcer. Now, if you have kids that also listen regularly and they repeat what we're saying or they play the announcer, well, send us an audio clip right to info@askdrbrown.org and send us an audio clip, and maybe they'll have a future in broadcasting as well. But today we want to debut a new broadcaster for you, announcer. Matt, I want you to give me your impression on this as well. But let's listen to the brand new Line of Fire announcer.
To the Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. Matt, shoot me the number. Shoot me the number. If you've got an audio clip for us to play, you call in. You don't even have to record it. a whole lot easier. Yeah, I think Braden's got a future as a radio announcer. So if you've got an audio clip you want us to play of your kids doing Line of Fire stuff, 704-498-4688. 704-498-4688. Also, with our phone lines jammed, if you're unable to get through today and want to leave your perspective or give me a piece of your mind, 704-498-4688 is the number to call. All right, let's go to Long Island. Dan, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, how you doing, Dr. Brown?
Doing well, thank you.
All right, from one Long Island to another, I was also very troubled by everything that's been transpiring in Ferguson. I'm an African-American man also. So, but at the same time, I feel like there are perspectives that are being ignored by the black community because of what we suffer most of the time. As you said, it's true, there are injustices and all these other things, but I believe that the hands of the grand jury members were tied. They had no choice. There was no way that they could really say that they wanted the officer to go to trial because a mob was demanding it. Once you have a situation that's as volatile as that one already was, if they would have been successful in getting their way, so to speak, it would have told everyone else, hey, guess what? Anytime we don't like something, we can just riot until everyone bends to our will. And then you have a whole Jesus and Pilate scenario playing out all over again. Okay, what do you want me to do? And I believe that that is the real reason why it went that way. I believe that there might have been more thought put into it. I believe that they might have deliberated longer. They might have really argued it out. But once the riots started happening, before anything was even being decided, before the officer was even brought in, what happened was immediately said, we cannot bend to the mob mentality. So even if this guy is wrong, even if we know he's wrong, we have to, for the sake of just safety, for the sake of protecting the masses, for the sake of just peace, we're going to have to just sacrifice this town.
What's really interesting, though? It's fascinating to have this discussion because I had the exact opposite perspective, which was because of the national scrutiny and the pressure and the riots that they deliberated over this way, way, way longer, because they were supposed to have a decision 2 months ago, and it went from September into the end of November. And it's just interesting to have these different perspectives, and only God knows which one is accurate, if either. But I had the exact opposite perspective, which was that the national attention and the fact that the president got involved, the fact that there was a federal investigation, the fact that there were people saying justice has to be done and you need to indict this guy on something, that put them under more pressure to get the verdict right, and that, you know, to see if there was any way to indict him. But either way, here's where we can definitely agree, Dan. Either way, what's clear is that all of the extra pressure, be it from the government, be it from protests or riots, be it over the volatility of another potentially race-related killing, only made things worse in terms of justice being done. Either way, whether you're right, I'm right, or the truth is somewhere between us, it makes it worse. Now, on the flip side, you could say, yeah, but there are a whole lot of decisions that have been made over the years that have been terrible. And at least we've got national scrutiny on this. All right, listen, we're going to keep talking. Just a reminder to you that if you miss any part of the broadcast, you can catch all of it by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and just clicking on Latest Broadcast later today. Anytime you're in the car over this next hour and a half, or you're away from your desk or something, you come back, want to listen, just go to askdrbrown.org and click the banner that says Listen Live. When you're there, when you're on my website, not only check out the latest article, but check out the latest resource offer. I've got a short video telling you all about it. It's one of these things, it's not just a great deal, but you'll listen to it and your own heart will be ignited. And that's all at Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Remember, let's be redemptive.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
During the break here, I've just been interacting with a black pastor on Facebook, and just having good interaction and talking through issues a little bit. And it's helping each time to give further insight into why people are reacting a certain way. If, let's just say it was reported that this young man, unarmed, was killed by a policeman, and there's an investigation, and there's tremendous concern, and the family is mourning and grieving over this, I think people would approach it a certain way. Once it becomes polarized, and obviously that's going to happen. We understand that's going to happen. To get in the conversation, 866-34-TRUTH. But once the polarizing begins to happen, then each thing inflames the other. You ever have a household argument that starts a certain way, then escalates, and next thing you're hostile towards each other? Have you ever had that happen? You have a disagreement with someone, it starts at a certain level and it escalates. That is certainly what has happened here. So, for example, if folks say, well, look, he was a gentle giant, he wouldn't hurt anyone. Well, now you're going to get a reaction on the other side that says, what are you talking about? Look at what he did at the store, and that's videotaped. And when the Officer Wilson found out the cigar theft and so on, and saw this young man with the cigars in his hand fit the description, suddenly he realized this is someone who's just committed a theft and shoved a store owner. And how are you going to say some gentle giant? And look, my house was burglarized last month. And it's like, well, what are you talking? You don't even care about this kid. That's a human life. That's lost. So each thing now inflames the other. And what happens is we end up with volatile divisions. Do I understand it? Yes. Do I understand it for the secular world? Yes. But within the body of Christ, no, we've got to do better. We've got to do better. 866-34-TRUTH. So the purpose of the broadcast is not to further inflame passions, but to interact and to get perspective. And as I say in my article, there's enough evidence to support skepticism on both sides. On the one hand, the grand jury carefully sifted the evidence for several months. Surely they delivered a fair verdict. On the other hand, there were 9 white jurors and 3 black jurors. Was this fair to Michael Brown and his family? Well, on the one hand, there's forensic evidence pointing to a struggle in the officer's vehicle and reports that Brown struck Wilson in the face. On the other hand, in the newly released photographs, Officer Wilson's face seems virtually unbruised. There's just a little redness on one side. And he did not appear to be in any rush to go to the hospital for treatment. On the one hand, there were multiple African-American witnesses who supported Officer Wilson's narrative of being charged at by Michael Brown. On the other hand, other African-American witnesses offered a very different account, including Brown's hands-up posture before he was shot. Each side will believe the evidence that supports its theories, and so we shouldn't expect this to change for a long time to come, barring definitive video evidence, which from all accounts does not exist. Now, just looking at the clock, got a few seconds before the next break, so we will take a break momentarily, and then we come back. Phone lines are jammed, but I want to speak to every one of you. I'm going to take every call that is currently holding in the next segment, so stay right there and keep trying to get through. But in the first point of my article, Ferguson Must Be Redeemed, you can read it by going to AskDrBrown.org, clicking on Latest Article. I state that no verdict could satisfy both sides. It was clear from the start that if the grand jury decided to indict Officer Wilson, many, especially white Americans, would see it as an example of the judicial process succumbing to political pressure. They would say that Wilson was condemned before the trial ever took place and that he was an innocent scapegoat offered up to quell an ugly uprising. Conversely, it was equally clear that if the grand jury decided not to indict Officer Wilson, many, especially black Americans, would see this as yet another miscarriage of justice and one more example of why the judicial process cannot be trusted. They would use the verdict as justification for their protest, saying that this was the only voice they had. Is anyone in the least bit surprised with the developments of the last 24 hours?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The duty of the grand jury is to separate fact from fiction. After a full and impartial and critical examination of all the evidence in the law, and decide if that evidence supported the filing of any criminal charges against Darren Wilson. They accepted and completed this monumental responsibility in a conscientious and expeditious manner. It is important to note here and say again that they are the only people who have heard and examined every witness and every piece of evidence.
All right, that was the voice of prosecuting attorney Robert McCullough, announcing at the press conference last night that police officer Darren Wilson would not be indicted in the death of 18-year-old Michael Brown, my namesake. As I watched, I didn't watch every minute, but I watched a good portion, I thought to myself immediately, all right, he's white and he has a reputation for being police friendly. You'd think someone in law enforcement as a prosecute attorney would be police friendly. I mean, they'd be working to fight against crime, etc. But I thought, well, that's going to only inflame tensions further and create further mistrust. I don't mean you bring in somebody else. I'm just saying that all that was obvious. How do we move past it? How do we move past the mistrust? How do we move past the suspicion? How do we move past the racial divide that exists even within the church? 866-34-TRUTH. All right, down to Houston, Texas with our friend Seiko. How you doing, man?
Dr. Brown, how are you doing, sir?
I'm blessed. Thanks. What's up?
Well, my perspective is really on the biblical side like yours is. I can't speak too much regarding, what the world does. Although I live in the world, I'm not to respond to what the world responds. So, what we witnessed last night is systemic of anyone that may not allow the Spirit of God to rule and reign in their hearts. I'm not making an attack on anyone. I'm just saying that these are the results when we don't have a respect for God's, law that he's established. It doesn't mean that we, have a perfect system, but we have the best system, I believe, that this world could probably, even offer. I'm not here to attack the Brown family, anyone else. Is a tragic situation, but I think from a biblical perspective, Dr. Brown, my disappointment and concern is how we as Christians, and particularly Black Christians, have been responding. It's unfortunate that prior to this decision that was rendered by the grand jury months ago, we had people in the body of Christ, like Matt Chandler and also Tabitha Anyabwile, making statements prematurely regarding a situation that the facts were not even presented yet. And I believe it caused more confusion and caused more racial divide than any other, thing that we may have, in the forefront. So I think when we look at issues, we need to be biblically minded and ask the question, okay, do we have all the facts? And if we don't have the facts, then we need to be very careful on how we voice our opinions, especially in this technological social media, environment and atmosphere that we have. And we have a lot of people that may follow you or myself or other people that are, respected in the body of Christ. And so what we kind of like, what we say, it really carries weight. And so now we have, even in the Black community, we have, people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson who do not represent a biblical worldview, let alone the body of Christ, in my opinion. This is just me saying this, that has the church's interest at heart to represent the body of Christ and to represent the kingdom of God. And so now we have these issues going on. And people are not lining up with the Word of God and even how we respond going forward to this. Rioting never solves anything.
Mm-hmm.
Racism never solves anything. How do we as Christians respond when there is injustice, even if it's a perceived injustice? I mean, how did Peter respond? How did he tell the tribes, the 12 tribes, to deal with their injustice with dealing with Nero? He told them to live peaceful lives.
Mm-hmm.
Let your conversation, let your behavior be excellent among the Gentiles. So that the thing that they slammed you for, that they may account of your good deeds, he says, glorify
yep.
God in the day of visitation. I don't see that happening, Dr. Brown. I don't see that happening at all.
All right, so here's the question, and I appreciate the call and the perspective. Speaking as a Black American and speaking first and foremost as a Christian. So here's the question. People would say that there are unhealed wounds, that there has been too much bad history with white America towards Black America. that only recently certain things have been fixed and addressed. Segregation is not that far back, etc. And that there are double standards and so on, and that, you know, this just opened up a wound. So let's say someone agrees and says, okay, it's always in the flesh, it's always wrong to riot and act a certain way, it's always wrong to prejudge and not listen to evidence. That's the flesh, that's not the spirit. So if I'm screaming and yelling at you, then I'm obviously not in the spirit, and I'm not gonna be thinking clearly. But right. If someone says, okay, look, cut us a little slack, because there's a lot of history here,
right,
and you can't, so how would you respond to that?
I respond to it by, number one, identifying the fact that is true. Yeah, there are injustices. People have been, you know, maligned and not been represented and treated fairly. I totally understand that, and would identify and agree with that. But we can't make this. We can't use that as an excuse. I'm talking about me as a black person telling another black person. How long are we going to go down memory lane about things that have happened? Because to be told, Dr. Brown, we as a people, black people, are doing more damage in our own communities. Let's talk about Chicago. Let's talk about Detroit. Let's went to Detroit last month. And our cities and our neighborhoods are dilapidated. And they look almost like Beirut, almost. So it's not white people doing this. But we want white people to fix our neighborhoods after we tear them up. That is irresponsible.
Hey, listen, brother. You are speaking certain things that many will be not in their heads agreement with, and others will be shouting back at you. So
yeah.
I'm going to leave your words there and allow folks to respond accordingly. I appreciate you weighing in. And look, one thing, 100%, we must step higher as the body. One thing, 100%, it's the last point of my article, Ferguson Must Be Redeemed. The church must lead the way. The church must lead the way. And the leaders of the church must lead the way. And that means we get past rhetoric, and that means that we sit down honestly to hear one another's blind spots, and that means that we seek the Lord earnestly and say, Jesus, what pleases you? How do we respond in a way that will bring peace and justice? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to East Hanover, New Jersey. Jay, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes,
yeah,
go ahead.
Dr. Brown. I got to make a statement that I don't agree with the looting and the vandalism, but I do agree with peaceful protest, boycotting. And another thing is, it's hard for me to believe that even though Michael Brown was, what they say, 6'4", almost 300 pounds,
yep.
It's hard for me to believe that even though he was that big, if someone's getting fired at with a gun, that you're going to continue to charge at someone with a gun. He was a human being, not a water buffalo. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I don't believe that he was still charging at the police officer. And they said he fell about 25 to 30 feet away. Why would you even attempt to charge at someone with a gun if they're 25 to 30 feet away? Like, you know you're not going to make it.
Yeah. So, Jay, in your opinion, why do you feel that the grand jury that looked at all the evidence and listened to all the testimonies felt that Officer Wilson acted accordingly and that his life was genuinely endangered? I'm not challenging, just like everyone else, just asking follow-up questions. Why do you feel that they examined the evidence and came to a different conclusion?
You know what? I really can't even answer that question because I wasn't in the room with them. I really can't. I wasn't in the room, so I don't know what they were presented with that we weren't presented with.
All clear. Hey, that's fair enough, and I appreciate it. I think some might say that if there's a command to stop, you know, that someone was already involved in a robbery earlier, there's a command to stop, and they don't, that the officer, you know, will use force. I don't know that, and that if there were drugs in a system, you know, could have acted, reacted in an irrational way. But again, we don't know. It's a tragic thing either way. But Jay, thank you so much for weighing in. Much appreciated. You have a blessed day.
You too. Thank you.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Jeanette in Rockland County, New York. What's your take?
Hi, Dr. Brown. My take is on the family. I'm 61 years old. I'm a Christian woman. And what I see now is such a issue with discipline and not following rules and laws and just wanting to do what they want to do, unfortunately. Just like you said, when an officer says stop, stop does not mean run. And I've seen that so many times. When I was coming up, one of the things you never even thought about was running. If they said stop, you stop. And if they asked you a question, you answered it. But now there's such an arrogance which inflames everything right now. The gentleman that you had on the line before the last one, I agree with him totally. We're tearing up our neighborhoods. We're having babies that we can't afford to take care of. I mean, it's just all upside down. And we weren't like that in the 50s and 60s. And now you can't even talk to some of these young people.
Tell you what, stay right there. I've got a question for you, Jeanette. Stay right there, please.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, as we're interacting redemptively about Ferguson and the big wounds that are being deeply, deeply exposed in our nation. 866-348-7884. Jeanette in Rockland County, New York, thanks for holding through the break. May I ask how old you are?
61.
61. All right, just a little bit older than me. I'm about to turn 60 next year. All right, I have shown students in our ministry school, Fire School of Ministry, a video from the early days of the Civil Rights Movement, from the desegregation of the lunch counters in Nashville. I've shown them this when we talk about Jesus Revolution and how to have positive cultural change. And there was a certain dignity in the way the protests were done, the nonviolent philosophy of Dr. King, how this was implemented. Men and women would go and sit at a lunch counter dressed up. You know, they'd be in suits and ties and the women in dresses, and they'd just be doing their school studying. And so when they were expelled or they were beaten, I mean, it's very intense to watch. But something's troubled me, and I do not have sufficient insight on this, but it does seem that before the civil rights movement, that there was a greater community dignity and discipline and things like that, and that once America repented of some of its evils against Black Americans, that instead of things getting better, they got worse. Now, you just articulated that. Why do you think that has happened?
I believe that it's a lack of our morals, our values. In the Black community, we loved the Lord. I was coming up. And there was a certain standard. The standard came from God. Now, in this world in general, there are no standards. People curse God. People wear the symbol of loving the Lord, the cross, like it's a bracelet to be thrown away. We've lost that standard of what God says is right and wrong. You're certainly right. The mannerisms that we dress, how we speak, it's just saddens me. It saddens me tremendously that the poor kids are being raised by people who have no clue, no clue. And this is what they see every day, the infestation of drugs and alcohol and perversion. It is tearing this country apart. It's so sad. And unfortunately, like in the 70s when the hippies were around, when the season changed, the white culture could, you know, go to the barbershop, cut their hair, put on a suit, and go back. And for some reason, some Blacks just didn't feel like they could integrate again. And just like the gentleman said before, we have to stop this, oh, it's the white man. No, it's not the white man all the time. It is us. We need to look at ourselves in the mirror. I don't see Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton standing up and saying, this is wrong. I don't see that. In the 60s, we had people that stood up and said, this is wrong. We're not going to do this. I have lots of different associates and friends and different races. I don't even look at race anymore. And the reason for that is because of God. I look at your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Your heart will tell me who you are. You know, I mean, it saddens my heart to see what is going on right now. And I pray for this president because he could have made things a whole lot better, but he's stuck back there, too. Him and Eric Holden, they're stuck back there. You can see it in what they do. It is so sad. And that's why we're on the road that we're on right now. And it's just not the black culture, but I'm just basically talking about the black culture now. But you just look at the world and see what's happening. Oh, my God, it's just painful.
Yeah, it's very painful on many fronts, but you've articulated some key issues that break my heart as well. And God knows this, but for many, many years, I've always felt a special solidarity with my black brothers and sisters. And if you gave me a choice of preaching in a black gospel church or a white gospel church, boy, I'd be in the black gospel church. There's a certain liveliness of heart. There's a certain soul. It's just hard for me to put my finger on it. There's something very real that I've always related to. And because of that, even though I haven't grown up in the same situations and can't relate from my own experience, the things you've articulated really, really do grieve me. Whoever is responsible, whatever the cause, we know it's the enemy behind it ultimately. And these things do break my heart. May God's grace prevail as we pray one for another and listen to each other. Thank you so much for your words. Much appreciated. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Betty in Charlotte, North Carolina. Time is short, so please dive right in.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I know time is short. First of all, I'm coming to your church. Second of all, did you not notice these people had a terrorist wrap around their face? Like, when we were, I'm an old black person. I was a part of the civil rights movement. We had nothing to hide because we had a fair and just cause. These people were disguised. They had terrorist wrappings around them, and that's what they are to good black people in their community. We live among terrorists. And the same guy who put the sheet over his head under that white sheet. Now there's a black person doing the terror in his own neighborhood. And those poor people that don't have a job tomorrow, who can't get up and go to a job to provide for their family, the church is going to have to get together and start sending food and money to Ferguson. So those people who lost their jobs from the buildings they burnt down, have something to sustain them.
Got it. Hey, Betty, thanks for weighing in. Great point, though, about...
And the black pulpit is behind this mess. They never call sin sin anymore. They let the children have babies out of wedlock. They never address it. They let men mistreat women. They never address it. It's like a subject they cannot see, but the only topic they can speak on is racism, and it's always one-sided.
All right, Betty, thank you for weighing in. Great point about the masks, whoever it is, Ku Klux Klan, black rioter, white supremacist, when we hide behind a mask, you know something's wrong. Make sure, absolutely, I agree with you. Make sure next time we spot each other at a service that you come up and introduce yourself. Yeah, Matt, of course, I was thinking the same thing, the Muslim terrorists with their executions. Why not take the mask off? Show who you are as you commit the murderous acts. And that's taking things even to another ugly extreme. All right, a bunch of callers hanging on. Please stay right there. All right, I'm going to get to calls quickly in the next segment into the new hour. Please visit my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. If you're blessed by what we do, if you appreciate the work that we're doing, stand with us. Your help at the end of the year would really be a blessing, would help us in so many ways, as we are expanding beyond what I can describe in a few minutes to reach many, many more people and to continue to address cutting-edge issues with grace and hopefully with wisdom and redemption. Make sure you check out the latest article, AskDrBrown.org. Click on latest article there. My bottom line today, we cannot let the tragic events in Ferguson just pass us by. We must step back and learn from them and act redemptively. All right, what are we going to do about the events in Ferguson, Missouri? What is a redemptive approach for us, the people of God?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Did you watch the press conference last night? Did you watch when the prosecuting attorney made his statement? And in fact, let's just listen to what he said. St. Louis County prosecuting attorney Robert McCullough giving his announcement and explaining afterwards in detail why the grand jury decided not to indict Officer Darren Wilson. This is what he had to say.
The duty of the grand jury is to separate fact from fiction. After a full and impartial and critical examination of all the evidence in the law and decide if that evidence supported the filing of any criminal charges against Darren Wilson, they accepted and completed this monumental responsibility in a conscientious and expeditious manner. It is important to note here and say again that they are the only people who have heard and examined every witness and every piece of evidence.
All right, and based on that, he explained that there would not be an indictment. When you heard that, when you heard the news, when you saw it online or however you got the word, was your initial reaction, thank God, justice was served. An innocent man, a policeman, acting within the proper bounds of his authority, acting with responsible use of force. Thank God he was not railroaded. Thank God he was not sacrificed as a scapegoat to the mobs and to political correctness. Was that your reaction? Or was your reaction, oh, no. A young man gets killed in cold blood, and now his killer gets exonerated. That proves that the justice system in America does not work. What was your perspective? 866-34-TRUTH. I am going to the phones very quickly today. First, let me tell you, I wrote an article. If you missed it, it's called Ferguson Must Be Redeemed. It's on different websites. If you want a link to it, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, and just click on latest article. I lay out five simple points. Number one, no verdict could satisfy both sides. That was self-evident from the start. Number two, there's enough evidence to support skepticism on both sides. Each one is going to have their narrative. Yes, we were not there with the grand jury, but each one is going to have their narrative of why they believe what they believe. Number three, this is not about Ferguson. The reason this has the attention of the nation is because it points to a national issue and to great gulfs in perspectives. Dennis Prager, and in his article, we have a moral divide, not a racial one, said, yes, there are different perspectives, Black America, White America. There are different perspectives. But he said this, once the facts come out, we are no longer speaking of perceptions. We are speaking of truth and falsehood. But some would say, ah, that's the question. Do we really have the facts? Point number four, the Ferguson tragedy must be redeemed. I, for one, am not just going to sit idly by and say this was a terrible thing that happened, but we go on. No, we've got to talk about these things, and we've got to learn from them, and we've got to treat this redemptively. Reaction, fleshly reaction, helps nothing. Whatever side of the issue you find yourself, fleshly reaction helps nothing. And you may be absolutely sure you can prove your point, and you can't believe that anyone would question it. Well, find out why they question it. Is that too much to ask? Find out why they question what to you is airtight and clear and obvious. And I'm saying that on both sides or all sides of the table. And then lastly, the church must lead the way. The church must lead the way. We can't expect secular society to do it. We can't expect nominal Christian leaders to do it. We can't expect the government to do it. We can't expect our president to do it. The church, followers of Jesus, we must lead the way. All right, we come back. I'm going straight to the phones. Michael, Dennis, Derek, you are next. Others will follow. 866-34-TRUTH. Now would be a good time to call before our phone lines are totally jammed as they were all of last hour.
Fire we want, for fire we please. Send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution as we talk through difficult issues together. For me, being able to do this 6.5 years has been a wonderful experience, not just getting to share my heart, but getting to hear yours and interact and listen and learn. Some terrific calls in the first hour. I want to hear you, what you have to say. If I ask a question, it's not to challenge, it's for clarification or for further insight. Fair enough? So we go to Baltimore, Maryland. Michael was holding for all. I guess he couldn't hold any longer. Let's go to Boston. Dennis, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, good afternoon, Dr. Brown. How you doing?
Doing very well, thank you.
I just have a thought. I have a few thoughts, and they're all jumbled, but you could probably make sense of it. One comment I want to make is that Scripture is being fulfilled, and we're forgetting that. These things must happen before our Savior comes back. Crazy things like this will go on. The next point I want to make is that discipline in the home is non-existent. You know, our parents need to take back, we as parents need to take back control, not from the kids, but from the government. You know, when our kids come home and say that you can't discipline us, you can't spank us, you can't treat us idly, you know, for the things that we do, you know, kids feel they can go outside and they can do whatever they want. Now, if I don't know the circumstances with a young fellow, Brown, but if he was in the right place, you know, he would not be doing what he was doing. And I'm sure if he had a strong, I don't know what he had, but if we can control our home, then the officers will not be killing our kids. Why is it that they can shoot our kids and kill them, but we cannot, we as parents can't discipline them when they're doing something wrong so that they can know that there is consequences for bad behavior. The next point, and the most important point I want to make is, why are these officers shooting to kill? As a police officer, they go to the training, to a marksmanship, so that they can aim where they need to aim. I'm sure if they would have shot this young man in his leg, he would have dropped. And if he didn't drop when they shoot him in one leg, they would shoot him in the other leg. Why would they shoot him twice to kill the young man? And that's what's happening. That is what's getting most of the people so irate and angry, because they're not only shooting them, which is bad in itself, but they're shooting to kill, not shoot to wound or shoot to apprehend. The first officer's priority is to apprehend the suspect, not to kill him.
Yep.
Not to kill him. That's my thought.
Yeah, Dennis, thanks for weighing in. And two things I'll just say in quick interaction. One, yeah, no question, if, according to all accounts, I think, if Michael Brown had my namesake, it's always makes it closer to home, obviously, with your own name. If the young man had simply complied with police, obviously he'd already committed a crime, but if he'd simply complied with police and just gotten out of the middle of the road and so on, then he'd be alive today. Maybe he'd face some charges for what he did in the store. I mean, obviously he'd be guilty of that, but he'd be alive today. No question. Lack of respect for authority is always going to get you in trouble. Second question, why wasn't he shot in the leg to be incapacitated? Fair question. I mean, I imagine the answer would be he was shot multiple times to try to stop him. But when someone's moving at you quickly and you're trying to shoot to stop someone, it's not always done properly. But I understand. You're sharing a concern in terms of outrage. Why did it have to be done like that? And there was a video. And by the way, I'm not here to indict Officer Wilson. My own expectation, but thank you for the call, sir. My own sentiments are that ultimately, when you're going to have this much scrutiny and this much evidence and sift it out together, that the grand jury is going to make a right decision. However, I don't know the facts. You don't know the facts any more than I know the facts, right? We know what we've heard, right? But I do know that there was a video of a black man with a knife who came after two white officers. I believe they're both white, and was basically saying, shoot me, as he went to attack them, apparently deranged. This was also in Ferguson, and someone captured this on video, and I watched it with Nancy, and the guy's laying on the ground, and they're still shooting at him. Why? I understand the adrenaline. I understand that, again, this is not to indict Officer Wilson. This is just a separate thing that we did have on video. why was he being shot at when he's laying there and he had a knife, they had guns. He's laying there now. Why shoot again? So I understand from our last caller, these are legitimate questions. Listen. As much as you may say, look, the grand jury was obviously right, and that's where the evidence pointed, and we just have to accept that. And if you can't accept that, then there's going to be chaos in society. As much as we can say that from one side, you've got to understand that there's another side saying, but there's a reason that we're skeptical of the court system. There's a reason that we're skeptical of the police force. Yes, there's only one set of facts, right? Everyone's entitled to their own opinion, as one senator once said, but not to their own facts, something like that. The facts may be a certain way in this case, but as I wrote an article, this is not just about Ferguson. There is a reason for the skepticism in many hearts in America, in many black families. There's a reason. I want to find out what that reason is. It's not going to change the facts here, and it's not going to bring Michael Brown back from the dead, and it's not going to alleviate the future pain that Darren Wilson is going to have to deal with. And it's not going to help the Brown family. I understand that. But if we don't talk and we don't get on the table why we are missing each other and why we have different perspectives, how are we ever going to move forward? How are we ever going to bring something constructive out of this? Let's go to Pineville, North Carolina. Derek, thanks so much for calling the Line of Fire.
Dr. Brown, I just stumbled upon your show, and I love it, man. You're doing an awesome job. Love it.
Well, thank you, sir. Much appreciated. Yes,
sir. I am a 39-year-old married father of four black boys, and I just have to respectfully disagree with I like the last caller's point of view, but the three callers before them, and I know they were my elders, but I think there's a generational...
Hang on just one second, because a lot of folks, you're in a city that gets both hours on the radio, but unless folks are listening online, they only get 1 hour or part of an hour. So the last three callers from the last hour were all black Americans, one of whom was a 61-year-old woman. And all of them basically placed the blame at the feet of the African-American community, either leaders like an Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson or other pastors and preachers, or just the nature of lawless protests, and that shows things are in the flesh, or failure to deal with our own homes and families. So that was their perspective. So back to you, Derek. Glad to hear your perspective. Please share it.
Yes, sir. I think there's a generational disconnect. Like I said, I have four sons, and I'm a children's book author. I've been a teacher, so I'm around young people all the time. So it's my job, you know, to stay connected with them. And I think the thing that irritates me the most when I hear from my elders is it almost seems like they have forgotten what has happened to, you know, the African-American community over the past 50 years. I mean, we didn't get here overnight. We are forced to function in pretty much a white supremacist system. And I'm not just talking about judicial. I'm talking about employment, education. And when you do this to any group of people over a extended amount of time, this is what you get. You get the broken homes. You get the missed and uneducated. You get the violence. You know what I mean? So if I'm in a predominantly black environment, I don't care what city it is, and you know the schools are in a horrible shape, I can almost guarantee you that there's going to be a massive amount of crime. There's going to be a massive amount of babies being born out of wedlock. Well, this didn't happen overnight. You know, when you deny people rights over decades, this is what you get, you know. And, you know, I think the most horrible thing that happened yesterday, which has been happening over decades, is that the same people that were allowed to prosecute this case were pretty much in bed, you know, with the police force. So how are we expected, you know, to receive any kind of justice in that situation?
Got it. All right, so, Derek, this is the very reason that we have these discussions on the air. To share perspectives. So you said something that got my attention about the prosecution being in bed with the police. See, it's and now listen, I'm not questioning what you said, but it's interesting because many other callers will be thinking, or listeners, what are you talking about, man? They're all on the side of justice. This is the law. It's just like you saying that President Obama is in bed with the government or something. It's like, no, you're supposed to be doing that. So I'm not saying that to dispute what you're saying, but simply to share a very different perspective. So here's the question. We got a break. So we'll talk about this further and love to hear from you again. What do we do about this as believers? I mean, you're not talking about just a little Band-Aid thing. How do we fix the cultural, racial, societal divide as believers?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, our last caller, Derek, raised some much, much larger issues that I've touched on here and there in the past, but these are things that we will pursue. Look, there are some who say that it was the whole democratic welfare system and Johnson policies that created the mess in society that we have today that makes it very, very difficult for many black Americans to have the same success that white Americans have or the same family stability. Now, look, ultimately, everyone has to take responsibility for themselves. In other words, if you mistreat me, if you sin against me, if you hurt me, if you put me in an unfair position, as a believer, I've got to trust God. I've got to say everything you've done to hurt me is going to help me. Everything you mean for evil, God will use for good. And I've got to be forgiving towards you and seek to overcome the evil in your life with the goodness of God working in my life. Absolutely. How do we deal with things on a larger societal level? This much I know. While many callers from different backgrounds, ethnicities, and colors will be listening to different callers saying amen to one and no way to the other, or, well, good point, or I hadn't thought of that. What we do know is ultimately, regardless of what society has dealt us and what people have done to us, regardless of that, if I make excuses for wrong, and Derek wasn't doing that, if I make excuses for wrongdoing, or if I blame others for my current situation, I will never advance. That's a fact. If I do that, it's just a principle in life. If I'm going to point the finger of accusation against others, you've done wrong here, you've done wrong there, you're guilty of this, and that's why I'm in my situation, you'll never grow. You'll never overcome. So even if you have been dealt the worst possible hand by malicious people who intentionally wanted to keep you down, please hear me. God can use those stumbling blocks as stepping stones. You can be closer to Jesus through it and ultimately be blessed by God. 866-34-TRUTH as we focus again on Ferguson. Let's go to Denise in Queens, New York. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello. Hi, Dr. Brown. It's very good being on your show today.
Thank you.
I want to extend my condolences to the Brown family. But I am very concerned about something. I'm a parent of a young African-American who has been taught, he has been taught by both myself and my husband to respect the law. He's got a very good education, but yet he is targeted because of his skin color. He has been pulled over a few times for no reason. He has been thrown up against a wall and handcuffed because he looked like someone they were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these things work against the psyche of the young African man. My point is that there has to be, whether a coming together of Christian leaders in both the black and let's say the white communities, we have to come together. We have to be on one accord and pressure our politicians to do right by us. But Black Americans cannot do it by themselves. It's got to be in unison. Yes, there has to be some unity between Black and white Christians pressuring these politicians to make changes in our policies, to make changes in our laws. And at the same time, the policing of our communities must be done with sensitivity to the Black experience. In other words, then they must, as we see what happened in Ferguson, there must be, if the percentage of the population is, let's say it's more African-American than white, then they should hire more police who are minorities, who are sensitive to those communities. We cannot do all this in a vacuum and expect things to change.
Yeah, a lot of points I'm absolutely with you on. And look, it's not that the Black community is in need and the white community is not. No, we're all in need together here. And it's part of what I mentioned in my article, Ferguson Must Be Redeemed, that the church has to lead the way here. And that also, look, because for the most part, because I was never racially profiled growing up. Mm. And, you know, as a Jewish kid where I grew up, there was not hatred towards me as a Jew either. So, I mean, I know history with Jews and history, but that was not my own history in America. So I've become sensitized to the issues like what you mentioned your son facing, because I've listened. I've listened to callers from different perspective and different ethnicity and skin color. And, you know, I don't know exactly what can be done in terms of, you know, the politicians and laws. I do know that the first thing we have to do is to sit down and say, okay, why do we have different reactions and different perspectives? Because a lot of times that conversation doesn't even happen. I mean, I can pretty well represent the Black American side of certain things, not by experience, but just because I'm repeating what I've heard from person after person, because I've been listening. Now, see, here's where it becomes really difficult. By the way, the minority thing, I don't understand it from the start. I mean, there's got to be some answer, but I haven't understood from the start when I looked at the Ferguson situation why there were so few Black cops. I didn't understand that. Right.
It's now, systemic, again, Dr. Brown. This is systemic. And
yeah.
That
so
it has to be changed.
Right. So the question is, I have no idea why that is. Is it something where there's not opportunity given, or is there something where there's an open door and people aren't walking through it? But that's an obvious thing. I mean, how can that be the case? And then with the grand jury, I trust that if people examine the evidence that long, they came to a right conclusion. But I wondered, why have a jury with 9 whites and 3 blacks? Because there's no way that the Black community is going to feel it was a fair. I mean, that was just a no-brainer.
And they're not represented.
Right, but
it's
then
not representative of the populace there.
On the
it's
flip
not.
Side, I'll put right. So again, these are things I'm simply saying with you, Denise. I don't understand. But then I'm just looking at a headline here from Michelle Malkin, August 15th of 2014. A cop is killed every 58 hours, and so they're saying you don't know what we're dealing with. Okay, so we got pushy with your son. We shouldn't, but we just had one of our officers shot. So again, I'm not justifying for a split second.
Dr. Brown, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Why aren't we hearing about this happening in white communities? Because there are kids or people of every ethnic background that are breaking laws. But why are we not hearing about that?
Well, the answer, I'm just throwing out the answer that you'd hear. Rudy Giuliani would say when he was mayor, there was a disproportionate amount of crime in Black communities, and he helped reduce that and save Black lives. But Denise, totally fair questions. That's why we're having this conversation. Thanks for calling.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we're definitely going to post that Facebook graphic. I just had a chance to look at it, and I think my caption is going to be, "You've got to be kidding me." And yep, you'll see it on Facebook in a little while about anti-Israel protesters invading Ferguson. 866-34-TRUTH. If you haven't read my article, Ferguson Must Be Redeemed, it's a call for leaders in the body, for Christian individuals, to lead the way in working for a redemptive response to what has happened in Ferguson, Missouri. Again, recognizing that this is the tip of the iceberg for something much bigger. This is the tip of the iceberg. The protests, peaceful protests, that's fine. The riots are always unjustified. Always the flesh, always wrong. The looting, the arson, the violence, always wrong, always the flesh, will never accomplish God's will in a constructive, positive way. But what we must recognize is that the reason for this being so volatile is because it is part of a much bigger picture. That's what I'm determined to talk through, listen, learn together, and be as constructive as I can be. According to stats I'm looking at, 150 cops are killed in the line of duty every year. So again, that works out to one death every 58 hours. According to Michelle Malkin, writing in nationalreview.com in August, an average over the past decade, there have been 58,261 assaults against law enforcement each year, resulting in 15,658 injuries. Wow. So that's just another side. You say, well, why is someone trigger happy? Or why is someone don't react properly? That could be some of the reason. But again, this story goes both ways. This goes both ways. I wish I had more time to talk through some of the issues with you, my listeners. I'm trying to give time to each caller, but we have so many callers, I want to get to as many as possible. So thank you for your patience. Larry in Charlotte, North Carolina, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. Dr. Brown, I want to first of all say God bless you. I was just speaking to one of your people that pre-screened the calls, and I wanted to say that I really appreciate you and the ministry God has given you. You're willing to face things that in this political correctness era that most Americans are not willing to face. And how can we get better if we continue to keep our heads buried into the sand? It's we live in a society today, it seems as though it's almost, I'm a minister here in Charlotte, and I use an illustration sometime with the church, is that the church has been sort of like an ostrich that puts its head in a hole and is looking for something down in that hole. And while the enemy has been plucking our tail feathers off, and when we take our head out of that hole, we look around and wonder what happened. I think what you stress, being vigilant, the people of God being active, but being active in what, as you would say, not in a fleshly manner. For we really know that we're not fighting really against flesh and blood, but there's a spiritual wickedness that is prevailing in the attacking the minds of the people. I want to say about the Ferguson incident, I think what you said is true. This is something, it's a boiling point. How we handle it is going to be very important.
Larry, let me just jump in, but thank you for the kind words. Stay there. We come back. Just want to let you finish the point you were making, and then Danny, Arnold, Brian, Sean, others will get to your calls. Stay right here.
Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Back up.
I'm talking to you.
Back up.
You don't want to be one of them. You don't want to get involved with that. White fascist pigs.
When things are volatile like that, it's difficult for cooler heads to prevail, but that is what must happen, and we must sit down and listen to each other. And if you're 100% sure that you have the right perspective, and your friend or your colleague or your coworker is 100% sure that they've got the right perspective and you're wrong, well, the right thing to do is to talk about it together and to say, all right, here's my perspective. Please tell me why you feel like that. The clip we just had, this is a white guy in New York saying, why are you defending these white fascist pigs? So this obviously crosses racial lines, but our perspectives are often so different. He's speaking to a black man there, so his perspectives are often so different that it obscures truth. How do we get to truth? So back to Larry, minister in Charlotte. The point you wanted to make specifically, back to you.
Yes, Dr. Brown. Dr. Brown, I was wanting to make a point in that with this incident in what happened in Ferguson is just kind of like a tipping point. I think it's systemic in the sense that we have a tendency to forget. Here in Charlotte, a year or so ago, a gentleman that had an automobile accident, crashed his car, left his car, went to knock on someone's door to get some help. Of course, the lady was frightened at that hour, about 3 o'clock in the morning. The police showed up. The gentleman was disarrayed, looking for help, walking towards the police. I don't know if he heard the police to say stop, but he kept walking, and they shot him multiple times. This goes back down to what happened in Florida when the 911 call, the gentleman was told, don't pursue it.
Right, George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin. Absolutely. Another difficult subject that we talked through together here. Yes, sir.
Right, and it seemed like it's building and building. One of the key things that you alluded to, normally when we would say that a grand jury has come up with, they got to be right, but being a person that was studied law, the grand jury can only give come back with a ruling with the evidence that been allowed for them to review. My take was that if you or I got shot a couple of times and the person had the gun at us, we probably would try to charge them. And this is some of the forensic evidence. They said where the bullets was consistent with as though someone was coming upon the police officer. But then that was another witness said that, you know, that stood by and he wasn't a law enforcement officer. Of course, he had some background where he had been involved with some minor criminal activity when he was younger. We don't know all the evidence that was allowed in. But beyond all of that, my thing is I believe that we have to look at, as I said earlier with that ostrich illustration, yep, our real history. We are better than that. And I believe God raised this nation up to be an example for the world, from people from all walks, all
I agree
color,
with you,
all
yep,
nations. And when I look at the United States, a young country compared to most countries in the world, we take a lot of European countries and African countries. You take civilizations that have been together for thousands of years, and they still can't get along. We've been together just for a few hundred years, and some of the obstacles we have overcome has been tremendous. If we can wrap our minds around that and see that we have more in common than we have difference, and each...
Yeah, and let me just jump in, just because I want to get to a few other callers, and these are large points to address, but yeah, the question with the grand jury, obviously they sifted a lot of evidence, took like 2 months longer than was expected, But as I write in my column, there's enough evidence to support skepticism on both sides because, you know, I think if I was being shot at by a policeman, you know, my assumption would be I'd raise my hands immediately and stop or, you know, just would run away rather than run towards. But, I mean, who knows? God knows the details. The proposal of Michael Brown's mother that police have body cameras, I don't know exactly what that entails. Yeah, but, I mean, to me, when you walk in the truth, you want everything brought into the light. You know, it's like the little boy when he says, "Mommy, I didn't eat the cookies. You can look at my teeth. You can look at my hands. You can look at my pockets. I didn't." When you're clean, you're clean. And otherwise, it's like, you know, don't check my teeth or don't, you know, because I got the residue of it. So whatever we can do as a society, sir, to bring more and more things into the light and to bring the perspective, okay, why was that man shot after the traffic incident? You know, why was he shot and killed? And then here, okay, the police say, okay, look, you got to understand what was just going on our end. And then someone else says, okay, I understand that, but that doesn't justify this and that. And then let's not worry about offending each other because we got people's lives at stake and we've got community futures at stake. So that's what we have to do. You know, sit down and thank you, sir, for the call. And I know there's more you had to say, but I just want to be fair to other callers. But that we got to be willing to offend each other. It's like, okay, I'm going to say something that's going to get you upset, but I just need to say it so I can understand your perspective. And then feel free to say something to me without our feelings getting hurt. And without like, well, I'm taking my marbles and I'm going home. We got to make a deeper commitment to talk through. And that's what we're doing right here on this radio broadcast. 866-34-TRUTH. Danny in Creedmoor, North Carolina, thanks so much for holding. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. Thank you for your show, sir.
You're welcome.
Hey, I just had three quick points. I'm an African-American, and, you know, I see this stuff on TV, the Trayvon deal, then the Ferguson deal. I have three things I think we can discuss that'll help out. I think the first thing we need to understand is African-Americans are stereotyped. You know,
totally agree with you.
African-Americans that are criminals, you know, that are thugs or whatever. So a lot of times we are stereotyped. And I think even though we are stereotyped, that should make us want to be on the up and up, doing the right thing, cooperating with the police even more because we know we are stereotyped. That doesn't mean that we just take, you know, the brutality and the excessiveness and, you know, the abuse of law enforcement officers and different things like that in the system. I don't think we should just take it, but it does mean that we need to carry ourselves in a much better way so that we won't have to be subject to, you know, so much of the stereotype. The other thing is, it's sad that African-Americans are quick to jump on the black and white bandwagon when a black kid is killed or a black person is killed by a white person. Without all the facts even being brought up, people are quick to jump to it. You know, you got Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, all of them want to run to Ferguson. But what about Chicago? Chicago had over 500 black people murdered by black people in Chicago. Why don't you deal with the stuff that's in your own backyard first before you go running to Ferguson? But we know it's a publicity thing for those guys. So we know racism is here, but we also have to tell people about consequences. I got a question. What if Michael Brown would have never stole from the store? What if Michael Brown would have never walked down the middle of the street in traffic? Michael Brown would probably be alive today.
Right.
If he would not have stole from the store and he would not have walked down the middle of that street, he could be alive somewhere on his way to college doing something positive with his life. But he chose to do that, and so we got to stop trying to blame the man for this and that, blame white folk for this and black folk for this and all that kind of stuff. We got to take responsibility for our own actions. And the last thing is, I think the best way for us to come together on this is for us all, like you said, to sit down. Don't worry about hurting nobody's feelings. Just lay it all out. If you got law enforcement agents that are low down, that are corrupt, and you know, they're racist and all that kind of stuff, you deal with it. That's the only way to get things fixed. You got to deal with the issues and not brush it under the rug because he's a fellow officer, fellow brother, and all that kind of stuff. You got to deal with the issues if you want to fix them, if the goal is to fix them. And we have been handed a bad, we got dealt some bad cards, when we start talking about the history of this country and all that kind of stuff. But yet and still, there are more African-American citizens that pay their taxes that are doing the right thing than there are of those that are out doing criminal activity and doing things they're not supposed to. Yep. And I think that's the thing we need to realize.
Danny, great call. I'm with you on every point that you made, and nothing to add to it. Thank you so much for weighing in. 866-34-TRUTH. In a moment, I'm going to give you another number to call. If you were trying to get through today and weren't able, or you just want to share your point of view, we come back, I'm going to give you a number to call. Otherwise, we're going straight to you, our callers, when we come back. I'm going to lead in with a clip from our president as he weighed in last night after the grand jury announcement, then after President Obama. You're up next with your calls.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
As all of you know, a few minutes ago, the grand jury deliberating the death of Michael Brown issued its decision. It's now come that either way was going to be subject of intense disagreement, not only in Ferguson, but across America. So I just want to say a few words suggesting how we might move forward. First and foremost, we are a nation built on the rule of law. And so we need to accept that this decision was the grand jury's to make. There are Americans who agree with it, and there are Americans who are deeply disappointed, even angry. It's an understandable reaction. But I join Michael's parents in asking anyone who protests this decision to do so peacefully. I also appeal to the law enforcement officials in Ferguson and the region to show care and restraint in managing peaceful protests that may occur. As they do their jobs in the coming days, they need to work with the community, not against the community, to distinguish the handful of people who may use the grand jury's decision as an excuse for violence, distinguish them from the vast majority who just want their voices heard around legitimate issues in terms of how communities and law enforcement interact. And we need to recognize that the situation in Ferguson speaks to broader challenges that we still face as a nation.
Yeah, so just one point. I don't know that it's a handful that are using this event, this tragic event, for destructive purposes. And when you think of Ferguson, what do you think of? You think of rioters. You think of looting. You think of arson. You think of fires. You think of anger. You think of violence. Now, is that just a handful that have come in from the outside? Or is that a majority? That's the problem. It becomes the larger picture. And that's why we really have to put all issues on the table and talk them through as constructively as we can, as honestly as we can, at the risk of offending each other. Because otherwise we make no progress. And then we pray and we go to God as children of God and we say, Father, we're your kids. You don't see color. You don't see these other things. We're your kids. And we want to please you and honor you. We want to make a difference in this world. And we are peacemakers and we are justice lovers. Show us the way. Sean in Dallas-Fort Worth, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, how you doing today?
Doing well, thanks.
That's good. Can I start off by reading Ephesians 6, and I believe it's in the 12.
Yeah.
It says, we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. And I think that's where we are missing it, because for years, I remember in college in the early 90s, my professor said, watch the news. If any horrible crime, murder, rape, or anything like that happens, if it's a black man, they'll show his picture. But if it's a white man, they won't show his picture. And I did not believe it until I watched every news station in the Dallas-Fort Worth area at that time. And it was so true. Now, I'm not about the black or white thing, but I do realize that the media and television and all of these avenues that we use for entertainment has depict the black man as someone evil. And as the caller before me alluded to, was basically as drug dealers,
murderers and all sorts of evil kind of things. And then everything that is good is normally light, complected, or white. That is those things in heavenly places. And those are the things that are causing division in this nation against people who love God, to look at one another, who another Christian, because he's white, oh, well, we can't agree with you. And I agree with you 100%. We have to say those things that are offensive, because the word is offensive to a sinner. It hurts the heart of a man. Some truth always hurts a liar. Truth always hurts an adulterer. Truth hurts a murderer. So we have to be standing on the word of God, speaking truth in all that we do. And I would have to be naive to say that there is not a division between blacks and whites. But the only way to bridge that gap is through the word of God. And we have to get out of that mindset that it's a black and white thing and look at the source behind it. And the source behind it is Satan.
Yeah, and we know that he divides and that he destroys. Right, so again, everything that we do must have a spiritual base and perspective. Thank you, Sean, for the call. I appreciate it. By the way, if you are unable to get through today but want to share your viewpoint, 704-498-4688, 704-498-4688. You have up to 3 minutes to do it there, and we may play some of the clips on the air. Make sure to visit my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. If you appreciate what we're doing with radio, if you appreciate the conversation we're having, I simply remind you that we're listener-sponsored. We're listener-supported. That's how we're on the air, with your help, called by God, but working together with your help. Stand with us. You can give a one-time gift or become a monthly supporter or torchbearer. As soon as the show is right, as soon as the show's over, I'm going to be signing Bibles in appreciation. A Tree of Life Bible, our gift to those who become torchbearers. And I so appreciate the multi-ethnic background of our callers, the different perspectives. And just allow me to say this before I go back to the phones, all right, if you'll allow me to. It really blesses me that as I travel, I'm greeted by so many African-American listeners who are beaming with joy to get to meet me face-to-face. And so many of you listen and call in because we've talked about really tough, controversial issues. And we've talked them through in a way that we've built trust. I was not mistrusting before, but some of you didn't know me. You had to learn to trust me, or whatever your perspective, or different doctrinal perspectives. I love hearing from my Calvinist friends who said, I don't agree with you on Calvinism, but I love your show. So thank you. That means so much to me. When you're at the website, go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on latest article to catch up. And also, be sure to check the resource offer. The resource offer will really bless you. There's a short video about it. And I am indebted to you for speaking truth to me that has helped enrich me as well. All right, we've got about 1 minute. Arnold in Durham, I wanted to get to you. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, God bless you. God bless you, Dr. Brown, and we appreciate you. I just want to weigh in on, I was watching this court program, and this one particular white mother who had adopted a young black African-American, and when she adopted him, he was about 13 at the time, and he was about 17, and he was doing good, and the first thing she said to him was, I'll move you to this neighborhood. This is a safe neighborhood. You don't have to worry anymore. Everything is going to be okay. And I also heard another caller who was a white mother who had an African-American son. And I love how she weighed in. So the African-American son, he's going to a game. He goes to the game. He's walking home. Just like with Zimmerman, they patrol after him. They're following him in the car. They're stalking him. He's scared. He's afraid. He rushes to his door to try to put his key in the door. The white gentleman jumps out of the car and busts him over the head.
Now, listen, dear brother, I've got to jump in there, but I think you just sent a message loud and clear. Friends, my bottom line, let us listen to each other and speak the truth at the risk of offending each other.